What is going on, all you Rowdy Baseball fans? It's Zach. Welcome back to another episode of At the Corner, and I am so thankful that you guys tuned into this episode. And as you can tell, things sound a little different, so this episode is being recorded, published, and edited on an iPad, recording with my AirPod Pros. I do not have my setup with me where I currently am, so we're making the best do with what we have. So, but this episode's pretty good. It was super nice to sit down with Chuck on Zoom, and we were fortunately joined by Quincy Wheeler this week. Quincy, obviously, as most of you know, the saint optimist, the patron saint of optimism on Guardians Twitter. Fantastic writer for Cover the Corner. If you guys are not reading his stuff, you are missing out on some of the best free baseball content that's out there. And obviously, Quincy is a very gifted baseball mind, and we're blessed to have him. I always say we're the most blessed fan base in Cleveland just because we have so many people that are always willing to share their brains and talk about baseball. And those are people in every different facet of fandom slash media slash former media, whatever the case may be. We've got it pretty good. So I'm not going to sit here and make y'all listen to this terrible microphone anymore. We're going to jump straight into this thing, and I hope you guys enjoy. We're going to try to keep this coming for you in the off season. Barring that my schedule continues to permit free time to do so. So I don't think that'll be an issue. I think we'll be able to keep stuff coming for you guys. So just stay tuned. It may be a little intermittent, but we'll keep it coming for you as we can. So without further ado, let's go. You're listening to At the Corner, a Cleveland Guardians podcast by Zach Caldwell and Chuck B.
Fastball hit in the air. A swing and a drive! Away back! Boom!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a special episode of At the Corner. I didn't think I was going to be able to sit down very much and do podcast stuff on my journey, but here we are, and I've got Chuck with me. Chuck, how you doing, buddy? It is good to see you. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while, Zach. I don't know. When was the last time we've done this? A few months now. So, yeah, this is
nice. I think it was just before Christmas.
It's nice to talk baseball on like a, you know, not such a boring stomach as a football, but just to talk about baseball again, just get it back in us a little bit, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we're also joined by the host of the Guardian Fancast, Quincy Wheeler. Okay. Quincy is a dear guest of ours that is always down to talk ball, and I'm thankful for it. So, Quincy, say hello and welcome.
Hello. Thanks, Zach. Thanks, Chuck. Always fun to talk to you guys. Yep, I haven't updated the old Guardians fan cast in a bit, but it'll be coming back with the season. There just hasn't been a ton to really discuss. I talked up until they added vote, and then not really a ton after that.
Well, there hasn't been a lot going on, but there is some stuff we can work through, and there's some hypotheticals we can talk about. You know, maybe it's all just wishful daydreaming, but there is some things that maybe the Guardians can still accomplish before we start getting into when pitchers and catchers start showing up next month and we start getting, you know, the equipment leaving and then players. So we got a lot of things to look forward to in spring training. We have a lot of questions that still need answered. But if you guys are cool with it, I'm just, you know, as it always is, we'll guide a conversation. We'll just kind of go through it. So the first thing that I have on the docket is let's start with Esteban Florial. So I thought this was kind of interesting. I think that's the thing that's kind of sticking out in my mind the most serious right now. So I feel like the Yankees and the Guardians just, they kind of swapped problems, it almost feels like. So Florial obviously didn't blossom in New York. He was kind of blocked. You know, Cody Morris, I thought he deserved more of a look than he got. Maybe, I don't know if they saw something in his medicals that made them want to give up on him, but you know, where are you guys on Florial? Does he have upside? Is he an everyday player? Is he platooning with Miles Straw? Like, what are we doing here?
All right, I'll go on this. So I'm driving on the highway, and Zach, I got a text that just says Esteban Florial with three question marks. That's how I found out about the trade, and I pull over on the shoulder on the highway to see what happened, and they traded Cody Morris for him. And then I'm digging into the numbers, and I'm just like, what's going on here? And then I read the great Quincy Wheeler's column on Cover the Corner that day, and I'm just like, okay, I'm good to go. It makes some sense. I'm just concerned that this is the outfield going forward. I don't think anything's coming at this point. So to, it's like we were expecting something bigger. I think versus right-handed pitching, that's on Florial. I think there are reasons to be optimistic. I think I worry a bit about the strikeouts a bit, but I think there's power. I think he has good gloves, especially in right field, and it looks like he's even out in center. Good speed. I was hoping for more this offseason, but I think this is it, and maybe it works out. Cody Morris, people forget he had a really good 2022. Like, he was a very good starter the second half of the season. And then he had, I think he had a, Quincy, what did he have? He had a shoulder, Terrace muscle. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, he's had a couple things, but yeah, he was one of those that ended up with that as well.
And then when he came back, he was not the same pitcher in 2023. He just, I don't know, maybe it was him coming back from injury in the bullpen, but he was not the same pitcher. So I don't think they gave up on him. I was a little stunned that it was Cody Morris of all people. Like, but maybe Florial works out. Maybe they see something we don't. But versus right-handed pitching, I'm a bit confident. I don't know how he's out of options. So this is your outfielder. He's gonna get at bats. So that's how it's gonna go. But Quincy, yeah. I read your column. And I was it made me happy. I'll say that.
Thank you, Chuck. Thanks for mentioning that. Yeah, covering the corner is my little spot of the internet I like to spend time writing. I think the exciting thing about Esteban Florial is that to me it indicates that the Guardians are willing to move on from Miles Straw every day as the center fielder. So that's just an exciting concept, pretty much regardless of who you're subbing in for Straw. Because Straw is just a terrible hitter.
A box of rocks would be an upgrade at this point. Like, well, let's be real, at least offensively.
Again, I understand that anybody who's in the major leagues can hit a baseball. Leagues, universes better than I can. But yeah, Straw's been very difficult to watch as a hitter over the past couple of years. Still an amazing fielder. Hopefully can get back to the base ceiling that he used to do. But so yeah, I think that's the main exciting thing about Florial. You know, Florial does a lot of things that you like. He hits the ball hard. Mm-hmm. When he hits the ball in the air a good bit. He doesn't do, you know, insane swinging strike rate. So it's kind of just your normal free swinger. The big problem and the reason that the Yankees traded him is that his end zone contact percentage is so low. Like, he had a great year in AAA last year, but his end zone contact rate was only 77%. And in the majors, it was around 70. And essentially, that's Gabriel Arias. And we all know, like, Arias, if he didn't have the issues of missing pitches in the zone, would be your starting shortstop, no question. Even with his ground ball rate being too high, you'd be like, man, we'll live with it. But again, major league end zone contact rate is 85%. So if you're running 70%, you got to do a lot of other things really well. So I guess the hope would be that Chris Valleca has the ability and the team have the ability to help him make more contact end zone, and that he'll be a great defensive outfielder.
Well, the upside is there. So I think at least the pluses, and I hate saying this because I don't like this sounding like I'm slandering Oscar Gonzalez, but you know, Oscar's problem was he could not, like, I don't know if it was his profile or his height. He just could not pick up breaking balls. His strikeout rate on breaking pitches, in particularly in the lower away third portion of the zone, was terrible. He could not lay off curveballs, sliders. He could smack the ball in the zone, but the problem is people figured out he would swing at everything out of the zone and he never saw another strike. So it's good that it sounds like Florial doesn't have that problem. Obviously, the Guardians are committed to Chris Valleca's approach because they did not change hitting coach regime when they hired Stephen Vogt. So they're confident in Valleca's ability to guide the team going forward. I don't know. I like it. I mean, it's something new. It's something. Like, we're at the point in the offseason where I'm just saying it was something. But, you know, I think there's a lot to be positive about.
To Quincy's original point, anything beats Miles Straw. Anything at this point.
At least offensively.
He has value as a, he has value as a 26th guy off the bench. But any and like we think about the bad trades that have happened in recent years, like Will Benson, Nolan Jones. I think the Miles Straw is the worst trade of them all because we traded away Diaz and we netted Miles Straw. So it's a lose lose on both sides. So I anything beats Miles Straw. Quincy, do you think his glove plays in center though, Florio?
Do you think he has the range?
I think that's the only – that's really the only way this makes sense is if his glove plays in the zone. That's the only way it makes sense to me. So I think this trade means that the Guardians think that his glove plays in center. I would be encouraged by the fact I've tried to watch some clips, and it seems like he's got obviously an amazing arm, so that makes up for a lot. But it seems to me like he runs pretty well out there. Issues might be more of jump than range, and arm seems like it'd be fine. So just getting the jump down, which is something players can improve. So I just think the trade indicates the Guardians think he can probably play in center, because that's where I don't think that they would go after this player unless they thought he could play in center. And it's a low risk thing, obviously, because he's on a rookie contract. So if it doesn't work out and you have to DFA him, the Yankees got him through waivers in April last year. So it's not a huge deal if it doesn't work out, but I think he's got a shot. He's going to get a shot to win the center field job in spring training. You guys mentioned like comparing him to Gonzalez. I was just going to say Rodriguez obviously has some swing and miss issues. He had a 34.5 whiff rate, and Florio had a 32.5 whiff rate. So he does swing and miss a good bit. When he makes contact, he makes hard contact. That's the big key. And then I was just going to compare his barrel rate for you here real quick to Oscar Gonzalez, because I think that's probably where you start to see some of those things come about. So, yeah, he had like twice the barrel rate of Gonzalez. He had a 15% barrel rate. And Oscar Gonzalez was at 8.9. His 15% barrel rate would have been second in AAA for the Guardians, behind Jose Tania, who just went off when his short time in AAA. He had a 15.9 barrel rate. But
wow,
for somebody, that was a small sample size. The leader for the Guardians in AAA would be Jonathan Rodriguez, who he was up there too in barrel rate at 13.8%. So what that tells you is that he knows how to get the barrel to the ball when he makes contact. And that's a great skill to have.
Quincy,
absolutely. Maybe just improve the contact rate a little bit.
Yep.
Maybe we're overrating this a bit, but does this trade for Florio say anything to you about how the organization views George Valera?
Or Will Brennan for that matter.
What did you say? Sorry, Chuck, what did you say about Valera?
I feel like we might be overrating this, but does the trade for Florio say anything to you about how the organization views George Valera?
I understand. Yeah. That might be true. I feel like if Florio is seen as a center fielder, then I don't think it affects Valera so much as it affects Brennan. But if they see Florio as just a guy that they like, who can play corner outfield or center field, just that, then yeah, it's a, hey, we prefer this guy over Valera is an argument you could make. I just feel like the organization probably can't put any stock in Valera until he shows that he can stay healthy. And if he does that, then that could be exciting, but they probably shouldn't count on that. So adding a guy like Florio isn't a bad idea, but I don't see it. My guess is that they think he can play center field, in which case I see it more as we don't necessarily think we should have bought all in on Will Brennan. That's how I would see it.
So do you think that Brennan is then the odd man out on opening day? Because right now the outfield consists of Kwan, Straw, Laureano, Florial, and who am I missing? Kwan, Straw, Laureano, Brennan. And yeah, Florio. So who's the odd man out right now? It'd have to be Brennan, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I think I'm assuming that the Guardians aren't going to have Davison De Los Santos on the opening day roster because I just can't quite figure out how.
Well, don't worry. That's the next topic. Don't worry.
If he isn't on the roster, then I could see them carrying five outfielders. And in that case, I think Brennan would be the platoon player with Laureano to start off. Then you let Valera get some more time, show he can be healthy in Columbus, get things going. And if Brennan is still struggling, then you can send Brennan to Columbus and bring Valera up if he's hitting well. So, yeah. And I talked about this a little bit today on Twitter, but I still think that the Guardians might bring in a cheap veteran to raise the floor. And whether it's on a minor league deal, which would probably be a guy like Jesse Winker on a minor league deal, or if they can get Gallo on a, you know, $4 to $6 million deal.
Randall Grichuk?
Randall Grichuk, yep. That could be. Yep. That could be.
I've said that
for I was thinking Gallo at 1 year at eight sounded reasonable, but I don't know if they would. I don't know if they would go that high. I think the 4 to 6 sounds more like what they'd target. And, you know, I think Gallo's floor is low enough that you could probably get him to take that, but he's going to strike out a lot. But he's also a guy that can, you know, he can hit the crap out of the ball. And also, there's room for strikeouts on this team because the strikeout percentage is already low.
Quincy, are we really playing Laureano every day versus righties, though? He's going to get overly exposed. The splits are not great with righties for his career.
Yeah, I hope not. I hope you're right. I hope they platoon Laureano, even if they platoon him with Brennan or, you know, Valera down the road. That's why I think that they might bring in a left-handed cheap vet rather than Grichuk. They might bring in Gallo or Winker because they could platoon with Laureano. Although Gallo actually hits left-handers pretty well, but he does.
So moving on a little bit to some, now that we've kind of touched on just the conundrum that is the outfield, there's another conundrum on the team. So the team is currently carrying a player on the 26-man roster that has to be rostered on the 26-man roster all year because he was a Rule 5 draft selection. So it's Davison De Los Santos. Guards picked him up from the D-backs. I think a lot of people in the Arizona media were kind of surprised that the D-backs did not protect him. He has not played any higher than AA. He spent all last year at AA. Has not played at AAA at all. Are they trading him? Are they sending him back and getting $50,000 back from the Diamondbacks? Is he going to make the opening day roster? Are they serious about this? Do they think his power ceiling is high enough that, you know, this 20-year-old kid who's never seen a pitch at AAA is, you know, worth carrying on the 26-man roster? Like, I don't have the answers to this, and I've been thinking about it a lot. And it's like Chuck said, it does not make sense. It's a dead roster spot right now, pretty much.
Here's something that's astounding. He doesn't turn 21 till July. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
He's young. Holy crap.
I think the thing that doesn't make sense is the Guardians, you would assume, are planning on trying to make the playoffs. And teams that are trying to make the playoffs don't carry 20-year-olds on that, you know, 20-year-olds aren't Juan Soto or Jackson Holliday. They don't carry them on the roster. And you can see, like, the projection systems say he's probably going to hit somewhere between 75 and 81 WRC plus. That's not a player you can just throw out there and say, hey, get your lumps, kid. And it wouldn't be very helpful for him. So I think Occam's razor suggests that the Guardians are going to give Davison De Los Santos a good, strong look in spring training. And then when they come out of spring training, unless something miraculous happens and he looks like a 20-year-old who can hit at the major league level, and they see that like on the backfields, it wouldn't necessarily be like spring training games so much as it would be maybe he's like matching up against Guardians. Maybe he's like cranking homers off of Emmanuel Clase or something, you know, where it's like, wow, you know, he's doing something else. Unless that happens, then either the Guardians are like, wow, we really like this kid, and so they work out a trade with the Rams for his full rights, or the Guardians are like, it's cool, we got to look, we'll send him back to the to the Diamondbacks and go from there.
So, does that happen often though? Like,
why doesn't it happen very often? Yeah.
I look back. I can't remember. The Guardians. It's insane that they picked a positional player in the Rule 5 draft, because I thought they could for sure go pitching. We all remember how Trevor Stephan worked out, but they have to trade for. He's not going to see major league pitching next year. I just don't see it. He's so young. It's crazy to throw him out there.
Well, but the thing is like, what would you even offer the Diamondbacks for his full rights? Like
James Karinchak,
because the Diamondbacks hold all the leverage in that trade.
Yeah, that's James Karinchak. I think Zach's right that that's the exact reason we don't see it happen a lot, is because if you select a player, then the other team knows, hey, they really like our guy, so
we can get something we want from them.
Yeah. Or if they're like, well, we really like our guy, so we want our guy back. So if you aren't going to send us our guy back, then you better give us this. And the other team's like, whoa, 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 there's no way we're giving you, you know, Chase the Lauder for Davison De Los Santos. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Diamondbacks are like, that's fine. Then send us back Davison De Los Santos. I imagine that happens. But in this case, it could be that the Guardians and the Diamondbacks have had the conversation. And maybe the Diamondbacks and Guardians have an understanding. Maybe the Diamondbacks are like, hey, you like this player, we like this player, but he's no sure thing. Let us know how things go in spring training. And if it doesn't work out, you can send us this guy. And Guardians are like, yeah, that sounds reasonable. That could happen.
It could. And also, I think the Diamondbacks are in need of hitting. So they were a playoff team that had a combined team WRC plus under 100 for the season. I don't think they need pitching. I think they would want... they're going to want some offense to go with that. And the offensive pickings right now, at least in terms of what I think the Diamondbacks would want, because they're in their contention window, is not anything that I see Cleveland being willing to part with. You know, I think they want to get a look at Jonathan Rodriguez. Chase De Lauder, who I'm going to ask about next, is probably not very far away from being major league ready, as if he continues on the path that he did last year. I don't see them being willing to part with. Yeah, it could be that they maybe finally decide to consolidate their middle infielder logjam, and one of Rocchio or Arias, or, you know, maybe you use Juan Brito. I know they're super high on Brito to go get him, but
maybe that's Jose Tana. I guess maybe Jose Tana makes sense. They would never dare trade Brito for a full right.
Not with the way Brito's been playing, no. But I could see Tana, especially with his offensive explosion, like Quincy was talking about in the last, what, maybe third of last season when he was up with Columbus, to do just hit everything. And he hit off of good pitchers. He hit off of career minor league pitchers. If it was in the zone, he smacked it. So I could see that. I think I'd be okay with parting with Tana, because I think he's hard blocked by everybody else that's in front of him that still needs to get evaluated.
I'd have to look and see what the Diamondbacks want. I feel like Tana is either – I feel like it's Tana and Freeman probably fighting it out for that utility spot on the Guardians roster. And whatever player doesn't win that spot should be traded somewhere, because, like, if you're the Athletics, if you're, you know, one of those teams that just poking around trying to rebuild, you'd absolutely want a Tana or a Freeman to be on your team. So,
yeah, absolutely. So I want to ask you guys, I asked Justin this in the last episode that we did before Christmas. Do you think there is a way that Chase De Lauder plays at the major league level this season?
Not in the first half. No chance. People forget this about Chase De Lauder. He was remarkable towards the end of the season last year, but he hasn't played in a lot. He missed a lot of games. He had an injury in the pros, and he had an injury in college. So it's not a George Valera situation. He needs reps. So he's definitely going to start out double A, and he'll probably stay there until the All-Star break, and then we'll see where we are. It's just me. I just think it's too much too soon, and I think he needs a full season of pro ball under his legs before they figure out to put him in at major league level. That's just me.
Yeah, I would probably go with Chuck. I think if Delauder absolutely just destroys AAA, then they might be they would probably bring him up if he's like running a 150 WRC plus in AAA in August. But otherwise I think you probably don't see him till 2025.
Yeah, that was my thought, is it probably have to be an absolute barn burner. Like, he's batting like 350, 360, he's got an OPS over one. Got a WRC plus 140, 150-ish, I think. It's not impossible. I think his ceiling is high enough. But again, he also is still young, and I don't like leveraging unrealistic expectations on young players because it's not fair to them. Baseball's a learning game, and that's what the farm's for.
All right, Quincy, I got two questions for you and Zach. Quincy, I know you read the Terry Puto's column. I always read his columns because I'm a fan of the old school guys. He predicts that Manzardo is not going to come out on opening day. I find that disturbing. I'm not going to lie. It's reality of major leagues that they're probably going to want to manipulate the service time as much as they can, which is just a harsh reality. Do you think that he's not going to make the, depending on things go in training camp, spring training? I'm sorry. Do you think he's going to make the major league roster, Quincy?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough one to sort through. Zach, you got thoughts about it?
It's insane that it's even a problem, but I think that's how it's gonna go.
All right. So the realist in me understands that this team and its front office is very in tune with the fact that it does not get a lot of financial liberty from ownership. And therefore, in order to make the most of that, getting the most possible amount of time out of good players is, that's just the nature of the business, and it sucks. However, Manzardo and Delauder both had a really good Arizona Fall League. However, there's a caveat on that. Some of the pitching that they faced in the Arizona Fall League was not great. They did face good pitching, but if you go look at some of the Arizona Fall League numbers from this past season, there are some guys out there that were thrown relief that their walk rate was over 4/9. They had an ERA over 13. Their K9s were terrible. So it's a mixed bucket, but I think the ceiling, I mean, they obviously liked him. They traded Savali for him. He's a top 40 MLB pipeline prospect. Do I think that if you want to win now with a young manager who the team believes can rally that young core and get in the locker room when things are tough and make the guys want to run through a brick wall after they just got shellacked in a game? Yeah, I think you want him on the roster. Is that
who's
their MO? No.
Who's going to get at bats at DH and first base outside of Naylor to even fill those shoes? I just don't.
Well, right now, if the roster plays out the way I think it does, the DH is going to be a rotating conundrum of Arias, whoever else is playing it short.
You can't do that.
Naylor.
At some point, you got to put your best foot forward.
Right now, I think if the roster as it is now, I think it would be Davis and De Los Santos, which you just discussed as a bad idea.
It makes me wonder.
What I'm trying to sort through mainly is how to take what Terry Pluto says. I feel like he probably just threw that out there because he probably was like, oh, Manzardo didn't get that many games at AAA in Cleveland, so he's not going to make the opening roster. I don't know if he really had any inside info. I wouldn't be surprised if Manzardo doesn't come up until May-ish. I think if he's hitting well, he probably comes up in May. But again, yep. I think this is why they'll probably bring in somebody, even if it's on a minor league deal, because you realize that if you bring in Gallo, you can also DH Gallo and have him split.
Gallo time. Can probably also play first base too. Like,
oh,
worst
Gallo
case scenario.
He can play first base. He's actually pretty decent at it. So, yeah.
I mean, he's a gold glove fielder.
Yeah. Well, first base,
not
probably.
And he's prior gold glove fielder in the outfield too, but
yeah,
he would play serviceable first base
outfield. His outfield defense has been declining quite a bit. So I'm not sure.
That's because of his age though. That's normal.
Yeah. Anyway, I think he's still serviceable in the outfield for sure. So I guess my guess is they bring in a vet that makes it pretty clear they're not going to start Manzardo in Cleveland. But if they don't, and they if they don't go with the roster as is and they leave Manzardo in Columbus, then everybody should be posting Manzardo's picture on every Guardians post, yes, just like they did with Bonehale. Even he's though like, I don't yep. think that had any effect on anything, really. It's just a way of relieving frustration, and I'll be yes. frustrated for sure.
I'm just like, it's so going to happen. He's going to get optioned, and then he's going to have like a 141 WRC plus rocking a 950 OPS. I'm just going to freak out. You got to put your best foot forward at some point. All right, Quincy.
Well, you got to cut the crap and try to win as many games early as you can, because early games buy you buffer later in the season when everybody's in like peak form.
All right, Quincy. We've done a couple of podcasts together, and I'm a huge fan of your work. You're one of my role models on this app. You know that, Quincy. So I really value your opinion. How's shortstop going to play out? I'm getting nervous about Arias. It's not just the winter ball. It's the splits with lefties last year was really bad. There was a series versus Boston where he wasn't even putting up like, I remember James Paxton was pitching against us. He didn't have one competitive at bat. It was fastball after fastball after fastball. He wasn't even getting close. And I'm just concerned. The swing was always a concern to me since the minute they got him. But the power and the defense and the arm, it's such an intriguing profile. But I worry if the bat could ever play in a full-time role. And Brian Rocchio it wasn't so encouraging, obviously, in the second half of the season when he did get his opportunity after Rosario was traded. But the tools are there, and he's had a lot of experience in terms of the minor leagues. How do you see this situation? Because Freeman, I think, is perfect fit in terms of utility player. But how do you see the shortstop situation playing out? Is it whoever gets first crack between Rocchio and Arias is your shortstop, and whoever doesn't make it gets optioned or traded? And how do you see it playing out, Quincy? And maybe All-Star break. Jimenez goes to shortstop, and then hello Juan Brito. Is that how it plays out?
That's a great question, Chuck. I think I would be surprised if Gabriel Arias doesn't start the season at shortstop, and I'm fine with that. Wow. The thing about winter stats, I think of it this way: if you're doing well in a winter league, that's great, and you should feel good about it. If you're doing poorly, it's not great. But you shouldn't read too much into it. You shouldn't read too much into it either way, because the pitching in most of these leagues is not very good. So it's been good to see Rocchio hit well in Venezuela. He still only has two homers. The slugging's not really there, which is the thing that you're kind of concerned about. But he is hitting the ball. He's getting to some doubles, and that's good. And Arias really didn't do much in Puerto Rico. But I don't really read too much into that. Again, Arias' issue is the end zone contact rate. That's the reason that it's to be concerned about him. And that combined with his ground ball rate is over 50%. That's not good at all. He's 10 percentage points higher than the league average of 42.3% at ground ball rate. So the questions, of course, for him are, can he make a little more end zone contact? Can he lift the ball a little bit more? And can he find a way to hit left-handers a little better? I think he'll improve against left-handed pitching. He'll probably decline a little bit against right-handed pitching, and it'll even him out somewhere around league average, a little below league average, as long as he doesn't get to the point where he's just chasing a bunch of sliders, which is a possibility. But the reason I think they're going to give him first opportunity is because Manny hits the ball hard when he hits it hard. He is country strong. Like, he just is a very, very, very strong kid. And he is, obviously, we know, a great defender. Every now and then he'll have a little bit of a fumble with the glove work, but his arm generally makes up for it. And his arm is special, of course. So I think when you got a player with that many tools and a guy that they saw last year who had some ups and downs and responded, you know, there was that time he lollygagged and Jose talked to him, and after that he was like running as hard as anybody and taking extra bases, and I think the team loves to see that. Plus, I've heard from a couple people that are close to the team and have front office people that they go out to dinner with and stuff who've said that the Guardians have Arias above Rocchio. They think Arias is better than Rocchio. So I think that's what we're going to see, whether we like it or not. I think that's what we're going to see. And just to, before Zach jumps in, I was just going to say, if you had to ask me of all our infield options, I do think Juan Brito is probably the surest bet. I like Rocchio. I like the potential he has, like how hard of a worker he is. I'd like to see him get a chance. But I do think that if I had to rank them all, like that whole Freeman, Arias, Rocchio, Tana, Martinez, Brito connection, I do think Brito is the surest bet of the bunch. And like Chuck said, that if he comes up, then you got to switch Jimenez to short.
Yeah, because Brito's not a, I don't think he's a guy I'd want to even try at shortstop. His range is probably not where you want it. I want to believe in Arias. And, you know, it's like, so like, look back at last year, like how long did we complain in the first part of the season when Josh was batting versus left-handers? And he had a terrible, like what, first 2 months of the season versus lefties. And Tito kept him in there versus lefties every single time. And he eventually did get better. He eventually started swinging at strikes. He stopped swinging at balls out of the zone less. He started making better zone contact. He started elevating the ball, hitting the ball hard. I mean, you saw that pay off. This may be one of those situations where you just got to give a kid his lumps and, you know, let him see it. Experience is the best teacher, especially at the major league level. You're not going to get any better unless you're, you know, you're playing every day. I think they ride with him. I think Rocchio is probably your immediate backup. If something happens to Arias, if he gets hurt, if he needs downtime, if he's day to day, it's the tried and true statement we've been saying for the last 2 years. It's just a logjam of middle infielders. What the heck are they going to do with all of them? And they've shown that they're content to do nothing with all of them and just hang on to all of them. So I think it's just going to be first come, first serve. I think the only way that Arias is going to be out is if he like really struggles. Like we're talking like end of May, he's batting under 200, like a .150. You know, because there comes a point where the defense at a premium position like shortstop is not going to be enough if you can't even bat 200.
Yeah, if he's sliding that bad by the end of May, maybe even midway, then I think you start to see Rocchio, or Tana or Freeman, and then I think Brito would be probably more after the All-Star break if he's doing well. You guys know that. Do you know what Gabriel Arias's OPS against left-handed pitching is in the minors overall?
I don't know. Probably something like. All right, so I'm gonna go under 650.
Okay, Chuck.
I'm gonna go 620.
Okay, since 2019, so that's above the complex leagues. His OPS against left-handed pitching is 765.
That's not terrible.
That's probably pretty similar to what Josh Naylor managed against left-handed pitching. So I think your comparison is
That's probably right around like league average.
Yeah. Gabriel Arias, he's only going to be 24 next month, I think. So I do think that he deserves to get more time against left-handed pitching. There's obviously an issue. You can see there's an issue, but he can probably correct some of those issues. For me, that's the big thing. When you look at whether somebody needs to get platooned or if somebody's got a problem with reverse splits, you got to go and find it in the minors because it's just so hard to tell with a young player when they're in the majors if it's a splits problem. Like, for example, Brennan at his age, if you look at the minor stats, if you look at what's happened in the majors, he's a platoon player. He shouldn't be playing against left-handed pitching. But Arias is young enough. He has the minor league track record where he should still get some at-bats against left-handed pitching before you're going to conclude, oh, there's just a problem here that he's not really shouldn't count him to solve. I wanted to mention, you know who among those infielders who has the best OPS in the minors against left-handed pitching? It'll be surprising. Because I'm pretty sure that it's Jose Tana, who's a left-handed hitter.
Yeah.
That actually doesn't surprise me because I think Tana's batting profile has always been.
He's always has been underrated. Yes.
Oh yeah, especially amongst us as like Guardians fans.
No, he was never like a top five like prospect. But in terms of his production, he's underrated. I know we don't.
His OPS over his OPS versus lefties is probably over 800.
That's gonna be a little fluky. Miners, y'all just get obsessed on the pro.
Wow. Over the past three years, he has an 830 OPS against left-handed pitching.
Wow.
I feel like he might get traded. I'm worried that he might get traded.
It's fine if they trade him, but I hope they do get something for him because I really think that Jose Tana
profile plays. I think he's valuable. He could be valuable.
Yeah, I think he can be a two-win shortstop in baseball. He's obviously a very hardworking kid.
Absolutely. As long as they don't trade him for Davison De Los Santos's full rights.
He got a gold. I know gold gloves are very like fluky and subjective, but he got a gold glove in the minors, no?
Yeah, I can't. You might have a better memory on that than I do. I'm not sure.
Oh. All right, Quincy. We can't let you go without talking Shane Bieber. You and I are on the forefront about the trade rumors all offseason. I thought he was going to get traded. We all thought he was going to get traded. The latest reports. All right, it feels like he's not going to get traded at this point, but you never know. All it takes is one phone call to change that. I'm still, even if he is on the team, Quincy, I'm worried about the pitching depth. It's not just Kyle Quantrill's out there. McKenzie and Bieber it's worrisome. They're pitching a full season healthy. Mm-hmm. Do you think Bieber stays, and are you worried about the pitching death overall, Quincy?
Well, it certainly seems right now that Bieber is going to stay for the year, and that's what has kind of been indicated. My guess is that we were probably pretty close to a Bieber trade in mid-December, and I think the Guardians may have gotten word that whatever the ultimate result is with Bally Sports, that they're going to get something close to what they were owed for this season. Now, whatever the news is, it's certainly not something where they're going to go out and spend a ton and make long-term commitments. But whatever the news they got, maybe it was enough to say, okay, the pressure isn't really on to try to cut salary or to get us like exactly back to last year's number, because right now they're maybe $5 to $7 million over last year's number. So I think that might have been what happened. So then they went back. Then they maybe went back to some of these teams they were close to a deal with and said, hey, we're just not going to move unless you give us this. And those teams are like, well, we thought there was some movement, so unless you're going to move, we're not going to give you that. And then things stalled out and teams left whatever deal was maybe possibly there on the table. That's my guess of what happened, because all the beat writers were saying, oh, seems like Bieber's going to get traded. Seems like he's likely to get traded. We heard that from Hoynes. We heard it from Zach Mizell. We heard it from Mandy Bell. So I think there was definitely smoke there. And then I think something changed and they were like, well, we can hang on to him.
And it was a pretty dramatic 180 almost.
And in terms of pitching depth, you know, Cantillo is exciting. Very, very exciting. You know, hit boost in velocity, big lefty, changeup has always been plus.
He has walk rate concerns, though.
Yeah, the control and the durability is a concern. Did he pitch? I think he might have crossed 100 innings last year, but that was by far the farthest he's ever done. And yep. Hunter Gaddis, I thought he wasn't terrible like everybody made him out to be last year. He for what he's supposed to be, I thought he was decent for what he's supposed
he's
to
a six,
be.
He's a six man. He's a six
and
man.
And that's okay. That's fine. It's okay to be Adam Plutko. It's fine. And
I just think that Gaddis would actually be a pretty good reliever. I just wish they
moved. I agree with that. Whereas I think
Xavion,
especially Curry, with that changeup,
I think Curry makes a ton of sense as a guy that you can trust to keep you in games as like a six starter if somebody goes down. I like that. I do think Gaddis has the ability to be a pretty darn good reliever. So I kind of hope they move him there, but I don't think they will move him to relief until Cantillo figures things out a little bit more.
Are you confident in the overall depth of the organization, Quincy, for this season in terms of pitching?
No, but they do have some guys to throw at the wall, so to speak. Like even Ryan Webb, who went to the Arizona Fall League, he's an interesting left-handed arm that I think probably could provide some major league depth this season. I honestly think that if you dropped Will Dion onto the roster, that he could probably give you a reasonable facsimile of a left-hand starter. You know, he looks like the way he pitches, his motion looks like Kershaw, and he only throws 89 though. And it kind of reminds me though of like 89 reminds me of Josh Tomlin, and just his approach is similar to that. Like he just finds a way to get guys out, deceptive, has pinpoint control, that kind of thing. So yeah, I feel like they do have some interesting guys, and you know, you're hoping that Cantillo and Nikhazy figure control issues out, and obviously you're hoping that Daniel Espino you know, makes a miraculous recovery and is ready to help at the major league level at some point. Those are the difference makers, I think.
Well, and who knows what version of Daniel Espino we're going to get. So that shoulder surgery that he had.
I don't think you could count on him for next year. That was a very serious, like, surgery.
No, you can't.
But, man, that guy, everybody who knows him just talks about how hard he works. And every time you see him, you can see he stays in incredible shape. So I wouldn't put it past him. And I do think if he's healthy, the team will be aggressive with him because they know they need to get what they can out of him while they can. I was going to say, too, the other thing not to completely forget is that they still have Ethan Hankins. Nobody picked up Ethan Hankins in the Rule 5 draft.
Did he go unprotected.
Yeah, do I think that Ethan Hankins is going to help the team this year? No, I don't. But I am excited about the fact that they get to have hopefully a full year to work with him, and maybe they can get him up to Akron, Columbus, and take a look at him there.
Oh, it's possible. And I mean, you know as well as I do, and Chuck as well, that a Major League Baseball team needs what on average like 12 starting pitchers to navigate through whatever injuries befall a team throughout the season. So, you know, depth is super important, and the Guardians are a pitching factory. So, you know, I think no matter what happens with the rotation, I think the depth, if you need it, is there. It may just be a lot of feeling around to find who the team is comfortable as that sixth or seventh man, or, you know, who's the doubleheader guy, you know, whatever the case that may be. So, all right. So we're running a little thin on time here. So we'll start to wrap this up. I want to get y'all's thoughts on, let's do three things that you are going to be watching for during spring training.
Three things. Manager, I think that goes without saying. That's like number one for everybody. Just it's like a brand new chapter, and how spring training is so important to him. Like for this team, the roster's kind of a mess in terms of like the roster, the overall. It's just so much up in the air, and I think it's going to be very important how he communicates with the players, how he communicates with the media, how he just handles the day to day operations of being a major league manager. I'm going shortstop, but I've been a Arias believer since day one, since we got him from San Diego. And so I think that's big. So how Gabriel Arias does in spring training versus Brocchio. And number three, I'm going to go Manzardo and De Los Santos. The whole mystique of the De Los Santos, it's like, it's very interesting just how young he is and how like it came out of left field that they selected him in the first place. So I think it's going to be cool to see how it plays out. Do they trade for the full rights? Does he actually sit on the bench for like 4 months? So like, Quincy, what's the rule? He needs 90 days of service time before they can option him down?
He has to be on the roster for 90 days before he can be traded.
You can't option him after 9 days. He has to be traded. Yes.
You guys might know some things that I don't know. I think my understanding is that he has to be on the roster 90 days in order to here it is. If this is the way I understand it, if Davison De Los Santos has an injury, he has to be on the major league roster for at least 90 days, either this year or next year. So, like, if he tore an ACL in the spring training, they wouldn't be able to say, well, we're keeping him on the roster 60 day. Next year he goes to the minors for us. Perfect. They still have to have him on the roster for 90 days, even if he gets hurt. That's the way I understood it. But you guys can check me on that. I think the three things that I would say, lineup stuff, like just seeing like how they handle Brennan and Florial, Arias and Rocchio and Tana and Freeman, like that. I'll just group that stuff and Straw and all stuff. Just lineup position player battles, number one. Number two, Tristan McKenzie being healthy. Like if he can make it through spring training and be healthy, that would just be tremendous.
That's going to be my number one.
Yeah, that's a big one. And then number three, I'll say, can they get an extension done with Josh Naylor? Because I do think that they'll approach. I do think they'll approach it. I do think that they'll approach it, and if they're willing to, if he's willing, can they get one done? So those are my three things.
Quincy, just to follow up on that real quick. Just to follow up, Quincy. I'm sorry. Yeah. All right, I hate projecting what the chances of getting an extension done with something. We have no idea what's going on in their lives in terms of money and what's good for someone and at certain stages of their lives. But I always thought in the back of my mind, yes, there's injury concerns, and yes, Josh Naylor, as he gets, he's only 2 years away from free agency, he would want a longer contract. But in the back of my mind, I always thought it's intriguing to play with your little brother. I always thought of that. So, I think he lives in San Diego in the offseason. I could be wrong about that. But just that alone, just he's guaranteed an opportunity to play with his brother for a minimum of 4 years, probably. Would you think that would, could possibly help get it done?
Yeah, I think so. And I think also that he knows, I mean, he's not unaware of his injury issues. So if he can lock up some security, he'd probably be willing to do so. I don't think he's going to give the organization a discount per se, but I don't even think they need a discount for a deal that would make sense for both sides. I just think his brother being there means that he should be open for a fair extension. And I think a fair extension doesn't break the bank. That's what I think.
Yep.
But
I agree.
Naylor could also be somebody, just real quick, and that one here is X3. I would say Naylor could also be a guy who's like, hey, I'm young. I want to bet on myself. I think I'm going to have another great year, so I'm not going to just take security. I'm going to go for the bank. But that wouldn't make a ton of sense to me if I were him. If he got a reasonable extension, if I were him, I'd do it, because you've had that traumatic ankle injury. It's probably best to get things secure.
Yep. So number one for me is going to be, like you said, so watching the way that the organization treats Tristan McKenzie in spring training. So that's going to tell us a lot. There's been some stuff that's come out kind of through the woodwork that he had a very regular off season, and that's great, but that doesn't mean squat, because elbow injuries as pitchers are deathly terrifying. They can come back before you know it. So I think watching the way that they treat him in spring training, his workload, his starts, the spacing of his starts, especially early in spring training, because, later in spring training, we generally tend to see more of the non-roster invites and maybe some of your minor league players, some of your 40-man guys. So watching that early is going to be important. Number two, I'm actually super excited to see Manzardo and DeLauder in spring training get a crack at some big league pitching. Maybe we'll get a little preview, and obviously it's going to be a small sample size, so you can't invest in it too firmly. But seeing how they do during spring training, super excited for that, because both of those guys are going to be future Guardians for a long time. And then number three, I'm just excited to have baseball back. Like, I need something. I need something, man. The Browns getting dusted out of the playoffs yesterday didn't help me any. So. But I'm just excited to see the way things shake out. Okay. So for number three, I'll say, I hope we come away with more answers about things than we have now, because there's just so many. The organization has kind of fumbled the bag a little bit in the last 2 years on making clear decisions about their path. I feel like they're stuck regarding their middle infielders. They're stuck on some other position players. The outfield is a conundrum. So I hope that having a new manager that maybe brings a little bit newer approach with some analytics plus player personalities leads to some clarity. Ideally, the right managerial candidate should be able to sort through those personalities and handle them and, you know, be able to balance that roster the way that we saw Terry Francona do a lot, especially with young guys when you'd have to tell them, you know, they weren't playing, they were getting sent down. Those are super important. So I hope that Vogt can captain the helm and that his managerial style will bring about some answers about roster composition. So
and again,
we are out of time.
Yeah, I was just going to say with what you said there at last, don't pay so much attention, not you guys, but people listening, don't pay so much attention to the results of games so much as what you hear from reporters who are there and who they choose to start at the beginning of games, because most of the time, not always, but most of the time, that's where they're going to see the starting pitcher. And or if they're subbing guys in as you look at the box scores to face the best relievers. The best relievers usually pitch earlier on in the games too. So usually the guys that start are the guys they're saying they most want to see match up against the best talent. So just something to keep in mind.
Yep.
One more real and fast.
That's
one more real fast. Quincy brought up extensions. Any chance of Tanner Bibee, you think, Zach or Quincy, of a possible extension?
Yeah, I don't know. They should look at all those young guys, but it's just hard to predict. I don't know.
They should be with the way that, because I think Tanner's ceiling is only going to go up because, I mean, y'all listening have heard the interview where we talked to him. Like, the thing that still blows me away to this day is he is a hard worker. Not only does he possess the natural raw talent to be a number one pitcher in baseball, he has a work ethic like no other. He's a dog. He's going to go in. He's going to put in the work. He's going to watch the film. He's going to read the scouting report. He's going to take that bump every fifth day, and he's going to bring his best A game. I think they'd be foolish not to extend him. You know, one of the things, go pull an Alex Anthopoulos. Please go lock up these guys before they price themselves out of your budget. Yeah, because if Tanner has another great year,
now or
I mean, he's already got a full year of service time. Yeah, it's now or never. He's already got a full year of service time because he finished top three in the Rookie of the Year voting.
Yep. Give me a Bibee, Williams, Allen, Bo Naylor extensions. Give them all to me. I'm fine with that.
Those are sneaky ones. Yep. That's a sneaky extension.
Yep. Lock them up 5-6 years at like 60, 70 million.
Honestly, if I could pick anybody, it would be Bo. I think that I'd extend even over Josh just to, because I believe in him. I think that'd be a big one. But anyway, all right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Quincy.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Quincy. We'll wrap it up. And to all of you that listened or are listening, thank you very much. And we'll see you guys next time.